You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend. Welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the Sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, I'm excited to be talking to Christine Hemp. She's an author, a poet, a speaker, and a coach. And we're going to be talking about her very recent memoir, Wild Ride Home, Love, Loss, and a Little White Horse. It's a family memoir, and one review said, "You have a way of weaving the joys of family with stunning blows of loss and very bad events." And so I want to say that I really enjoyed reading this book. It was not depressing at all. And I want to talk to Christine about it today. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much, Chris. Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about the book and about other things in your life. But right away, I want you to tell us a little bit about your creative life and what brought you to be writing a memoir at this time.
Well, that's a really good question. I think the creative life is a continuum, and the things that pop up for us to do as writers, artists of any kind, just sort of arise out of not only the things that have happened to you, but who you are at the time. That's what's quite interesting about memoir. And my creative life has always been, you know, I work to buy my time to write as a poet and a writer. And I've always had kind of cool jobs that dovetailed really with what I do. And the kind of cool part is that when an artist actually integrates her whole life into her work and how she talks about her life, it's really a lot bigger than people imagine. Mm-hmm. I teach at University of Iowa in the summer at the Summer Writing Festival, and I gave a lecture last year about the writing life, but I crossed out the words writing and talked to the participants about how writers, it's our whole life that goes into our work. It isn't just, oh, I'm a writer and I'm clickety-clacketing on the typewriter. But as you know, I have a horse. I have other interests and other things that all feed into the creative work. And so if we limit ourselves to saying, well, I'm a writer, as if we're a, you know, doctor or whatever, I think that's limiting for any creative person or any person.
Mm-hmm. I see the creativity, first of all, just in that great visual of crossing out write to like indicate editing. And also your website is...
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
Yes, it's quite beautiful, and you know, the pictures that you chose are really fun to look at. So I wanted to ask about how long you worked on this memoir. Was it a long-term project?
Oh, Chris, we're talking a long time, because I started it long before many of the events in this book happened. I was living in Port Townsend, and I moved here in 98, but I began the work, I'd say, over a decade ago, almost, maybe 15 years ago, when I was going to write about my poet adventures, because mm-hmm. a friend of mine said, you got to write about your poetry and where you've been going, you know, because I've taken my poem into space, or, you know, I blasted a poem on a NASA mission. And he said, you got to write about that. So I started that, but every time I just kept coming back to my family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And at that time, my mother was in the beginning of Alzheimer's. And so that informed the story. And little did I know that other events would actually shoulder their way in to the narrative and change the whole complexion of the book.
Well, this book really is a lot about your family and you know, they play major roles in the story. But the cover of the book and the title, you know, really makes you think about this wonderful horse, this white horse, this Arabian horse. So let's talk a little bit. Let's introduce our listeners to the horse, Buddy, and then we'll talk about how he fits into the story.
Okay, great.
Could you do a little bit of reading to introduce us?
Yes, and you had asked me to start from the beginning, and so I will. And those of you in Port Townsend will recognize this landscape. So the first chapter is called Pressure and Release, when I take Buddy to a horsemanship clinic at the fairgrounds. So this is the beginning of Pressure and Release. A bald eagle skims along the bluff where wind-blown Douglas firs, their exposed roots like talons, grip the eroding cliff. Gulls circle and warn the bird of prey not to come too close. 150 feet below, the Salish Sea crashes and stretches west to the Pacific. I arrive on foot with an empty water bucket just as the morning sun spills across the field. Near the meadow gate, a small white horse and two mules are dozing. The horse's delicate head flies up when he hears me coming. He nickers and nods. I sneak a lead rope around his neck. No time for hide and seek today. And brush his bright coat while he picks up a stick and waves it in the air as if conducting an orchestra. Come on, Buddy, I tell him. We have places to go. I toss the brush into the bucket along with my sandwich, skinny him out of the gate so the mules won't escape, then tack him up with an old bridle I'd saved since childhood. He gnaws at the bit, dancing in place. After sidling him over to a sawhorse, I jump up with one hand clutching both reins and a long hank of white mane, slip my leg over his bare back, and carefully lift the bucket in my other hand. As my weight settles, the bucket rattles and Buddy rears and skitters so frantically I have to drop it. So much for supplies. We head off down the road, Buddy's legs in a whir, his nostrils wide, my heart beating fast. Buddy isn't the only cause for apprehension. He shies at everything from plastic bags to rabbits. It's the thought of seeing horse people again. My teenage horse show days return, and even in middle age, insecurity rises like a warm flood. I can certainly ride this snappy gelding. I've been doing that all summer. But re-entry into a world of the right tack or registered horses spooks me more than Buddy with the bucket.
Okay, there's Buddy and a little bit about you, too. That's a great introduction. So the framework of this story, the way you use these lessons that you're about to embark on, training Buddy and getting him to be a horse that belongs to you and that you have a relationship with, it interweaves with the rest of your story. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, that was the greatest gift that Buddy gave to me almost. Actually, he is the greatest gift. But his giving me the thread to weave this story together. I was in a real funk about the memoir at the time. I had a huge manuscript. I had a lot of chapters done. I had an agent who just loved the story. But it wasn't coming together. There was something that wasn't just absolutely fusing the whole story together. And I was at Iowa where I teach in the summer. And one of my colleagues and I get together and write together when we're there, and then meet at night. And I held up my manuscript to her and I said, oh, Sans, this manuscript, I just feel like it's a big old weight. All I want to do is write about Buddy. And she just raised her left eyebrow and there we go. And so when I started beginning to write about Buddy, I noticed the parallels between the events that had really tried my soul and the events with Buddy and our learning together in relationship and his trauma and my trauma and how we really understood each other. And I came to understand that language has so much more to do than words.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am not a horse person, but I was totally engaged with the way that Ken talked about Buddy, and also the terms pressure and release. Mm-hmm. And then in the next chapter, or not in the next chapter, but soon, you introduce a relationship with a man that sounds like, oh my God, so romantic. I mean, I was going, well, how come I haven't met anybody like this? I mean, you know, here he is from Scotland, and he's a fly fisherman, and just, you know, just everything about him sounds so wonderful. And then from pressure and release, you go to false join up.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that work out with using Buddy as, to me it seemed like you were foreshadowing your relationship.
Yes, that's what became clear to me, that the kind of respect that Ken, my trainer, helped me realize with the horse, even though we love them. There's a line at the end of this chapter about how Ken says, well, look, you know, this horse and you are totally, you have a relationship already, he says, but I can see some disrespect, that Buddy was kind of nosing into me and taking up space. And he said, would you let somebody, a human, do that to you, even though you loved him? And those are real lines from Ken, you know, and that's what was so extraordinary, because Ken is beautiful with language himself in describing how a horse and a human can connect. And yes, my agent always called Trey in the book the bad boyfriend, and he was a fiance, actually. We were planning to get married, but that part of the story made me understand how also horses become damaged. People can become damaged, and the character, or real person, different name, Trey, was damaged in his youth. And I did not realize that. I didn't know how to gauge that, and it was terribly frightening. And that was I'm not going to give it away in the book, but will see what happens.
That's true, because this book has a lot of themes, and you know, something that runs through it are your relationships, not just with men, although men are important, mm-hmm. Ken, your romantic relationships, your teachers, mm-hmm. your fly fishing partner, and, you know, just people that pop up that are important, but also, and your father, of course, I can't forget about Peter, but also women, mm-hmm. friendships. But there's a lot of sorrow and loss, and a lot of breaking points. So can you talk a little bit about that, your survival, when you knew that something had to give? Pick anything, but I just want you to reveal a little bit about some of the trauma that you went through in your life in this memoir.
Yeah, they seemed to follow quickly upon the heels of the other, which was sort of a new thing for me, that they kind of, a lot of death and illness. And your question about that is, tell you...
Well, how did you cope? How did you survive these things with such optimism, really, towards life and going on?
Well, I would say my family is a central part of this book. And somebody asked me, you know, is your family, do you guys really like each other that much? You know, and I can see why that's a question for some people. But I think I would use the word spiritual connection my family has, and it's not outwardly religious or evangelical. It's I think we believe in something larger than just the events of our lives, that things have meaning in life and that we can get through them, and even in death. And that's what I learned. I really think, Chris, when I was writing it, I learned it as I was writing it as well as living it.
Mm-hmm.
That there is something much larger to the mystery of this life than just events or facts or diagnoses.
Right. I just want to say that there's something in this book for people that are coping as caregivers, trying to understand Alzheimer's and a really severe diagnosis of cancer, and just the attitudes of people, I think, are quite inspirational and just made me feel more solid about some
Thank
of the
you.
Things that I've gone through as well.
I got an email this morning that was extremely touching from, I used to play in an Irish Celtic band when I lived in England, and we were tight, you know, and we've kept up with each other all these years. It was in my 20s when I lived there, and the whistle player in the band, Keith, wonderful guy, wrote to tell me his wife had died, and that my book had been so important to her. It was the last book she read before she died. And I cried this morning thinking of that. My friends far away and the tendrils of connection still there. And I, you know, it's kind of like beyond my power. You know, you write something, you don't know where it's going to go. Like your children go off in the world. You don't know what they're going to do in the world, what their work is.
That's right. Especially in this time. So I'm glad that you told us about this, because that's just one of the ways that I felt when I was reading the book. My name's Chris Wilson, by the way, and I'm the host of this show, Book Lovers Cafe, and we're talking to Christine Hemp, and she's telling us about her memoir, her family memoir, Wild Ride Home. And We've talked a little bit about the book. It's got a lot of themes, and it would appeal to a variety of people, from horse women and men to fly fishermen and even falconry. Although I have to insert this about falconry. I used to be really romantic about falconry, and then I read H is for Hawk, and then the excerpt from this book, and it's okay. Now I understand that I should not have a falcon. Anyway,
that's really good.
Creativity, personal loss, and also finding happiness and contentment in your life. So it's a great book. And thank you for being here today, Christine. And so how do you think about creating art out of everyday life experiences? What's your process there?
Well, I think when you just try to take what's ever there, you know, I mean, whether something's funny, I really think funny is important. My family thinks funny is important, as you know from the book. Creative life is a life maybe that just looks at the minutiae as much as the big picture, that tiny things. For example, I don't know if this will answer your question, but I've been stuck in some things in this time of upheaval in our country, and so I've started to write really tiny poems right now, little haiku, and I've been writing a series about insects. So insects, you know, I have, you know, a gnat. Yesterday's poem was a gnat. And so I think when you talk about creative process, it's just what's ever available, what's ever happening right then. And maybe for me, it'll become a poem, an essay. I'm poking away at a new book of creative nonfiction. And sometimes you have to wait.
This is a time of waiting, it does seem.
So doesn't it seem that way? Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about poetry, so that's great. Uh-huh. You already started to talk about the insects and how, you know, looking at something really, really closely, and we have more time to do that, it seems.
It does, doesn't it?
You know, even during the time of the smoke, when I just kept staring at the orb spiders and the hummingbirds, you know, for hours. But so do you write, does it come and go, or do you write little snippets of poems often?
Yeah, I write little things often. And we tend to think that the big things are important, like is your new book done yet? No, you have to follow your own rhythms in just be really attentive and listen to your own process, if you call it that, and let them come But do your exercises. I write with my students and my coaching clients, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's always really fun because there's no risk in it. You write with your students and your clients. You get new ideas just like they do.
And being a writing coach, does that that works pretty well with emailing pieces and
totally.
Them coming back, going back and forth, and you commenting. Mm-hmm. Zoom coaching calls.
Yeah, they are. And they've always been that way, mm-hmm. phone and Zoom. So that didn't change for me during the pandemic. It hasn't changed. I found my clients who are living alone, for example, really appreciate the continuity and the conversation of not just us on Zoom, but in their writing and knowing they're getting heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, I saw that you are a speaker for Humanities Washington. Mm-hmm. And so you speak in the libraries. And so are you doing that virtually? And what's your latest talk about?
It's all one talk. You get chosen for that particular talk. But I have been tweaking mine like crazy, obviously, because of the times. My talk is called From Homer to Hashtags, mm-hmm. Our Changing Language. And I had such a great idea about it. And I mean, it's 2 years ago when I made the talk and got in and then served for a year. And they've asked me to go on because of this virtual thing. And now we're on virtual. And what's so much fun is that, for example, my next one will be at the Anacortes Library in a couple of weeks, but not at the Anacortes Library. It'll be coming through my little poet station, my studio on Zoom. And yet it brings people not just from Washington State, but all over now. Mm-hmm. Because if I advertise it to my larger mailing list, they come from Chile or, France. And it's very fun. And the talk is fun because it talks about how language has really changed and how it morphs even now with the pandemic, mm-hmm. and how we use different, not only the medium is different. We don't write with pens as much as we write on our phones or our laptops. And how has that changed how we communicate? It's been really fun because then the discussion is the most fascinating thing for me because then people respond. And it's a slideshow, too. I bring in art, and so it's a visual thing. It isn't just me talking. I've learned how to do the, of course, share document on Zoom. And so my PowerPoint thing, which I have so much fun with the pictures and how they go with how language has changed. And I also address how language with my horse mm-hmm. is a language in and of itself, mm-hmm. and how we're changing how we relate to each other now in the world.
And I also remember now that I wanted to talk to you about landscapes. Mm-hmm. And in the book, it seemed like the place was really important to you.
Very much so. You're absolutely right. I just adore writing about the land and the earth. And my time in New Mexico was so rich and so beautiful. And that landscape has affected me a lot. And landscape almost kind of becomes another character in the book because it affects me. Like when I moved back to the Pacific Northwest, where I'm from, I noticed things from my childhood and my youth here. After I went to college, I lived in all sorts of places, but the tiny things, the moss here, mm-hmm. the way the light shines in, November.
I know.
The way the maple leaves stick to the sidewalk. They're so big and so flat, and they create a collage. All those, and the smells, all of the senses when I came back home were so powerful. Because I was in grief as well when I moved home. And mm-hmm. so when I moved to Port Townsend, home meaning the Northwest,
right.
it gave me all these things from mm-hmm. my past.
Mm-hmm. It fills you up. So this time is I think, kind of hard for artists. Mm-hmm. But you seem to have a very entrepreneurial spirit about what you've done in your life. And do you have any recommendations and suggestions for people that all of a sudden all their venues seem to be gone?
Yes, I think we have to keep our ears open for where people can listen, whether that's painting. My friend Kim Kopp, who is an artist, and she and Jim Craft had a show recently. They, you know, they did things virtually and talked about their art. And as far as what I'd recommend for artists is to keep working and keep finding where your passion and your love for beauty lies, no matter where that is, even if it's online, if it's a, you know, share your paintings online, figure out a way to create your own little venue, your own venue, who you are, not who you think you should be as an artist or a writer or what have you, but a place where you can express. And if you're a poet, then maybe you'll find different places. You will mail your poems to people. Maybe you will send them every Wednesday online to your best friends. It's a conversation. Artists need that conversation. And finding it anywhere, even reading it to the animals.
Right.
My cats yawn, but then it's a response, isn't it?
They must purr at some point.
Yeah, they do.
They purr at some point.
And lie down on the desk on top of everything.
And weave in between your legs.
Oh, of course.
To show all their appreciation. Well, we have been listening. You have been listening to Christine Hamp talk about her life in writing and also talk about her memoir. And her memoir is called Wild Ride Home. And you can find it. You can request it now at the library.
And Imprint Books, too,
yes,
has it.
And Imprint Books and various places. And I suggest you go to her website as well to find out more about her. And then you'll be able to listen to Humanities Washington and find out a lot more. Is there anything, any books that you would recommend reading during this time or anybody that's influenced you? What are you thinking about now?
Well, right now I'm reading a beautiful novel called This Is Happiness by an Irish writer named Niall. And it's quite beautiful. Talk about landscape. I think I like it because the way he describes the light. And there is something very uplifting is kind of a corny word, but it's very uplifting in the language, though the what's happening in the book is unsettling. And there is a lightness of being in his writing. And I think right now there are places that we go in these times to try to find not just comfort, but an openness, something bigger than what's happening.
A lightness of being. Thank you so much, Christine, for being with us today. Join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen to past shows or this show again if you came in halfway through on the podcast page on the website at kptz.org. You can make a donation to the station there as well. Carl Allen is the editor who smooths out all the rough edges. And thanks to all the volunteers and supporters who make this wonderful radio station possible.
When I'm not doing fine, I keep this in mind. I can take a breath or two. When I want to feel well, I can be still. I can take a breath or two. Breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. When I am still, I can be fine. Breathing in and out.